If you're a regular here at the King's Arms, you'll know that what we want to do each week is we want to allow the Bible to speak to us right off the page. And the way that we tend to go about doing that is by doing a series, working through a letter or a book of the Bible. And of late, we've been working through Luke's Gospel. And we've entitled the series we're doing Divine Mission, because we're wanting to get an understanding of both the mission and the ministry that Jesus is on. And this is actually week 42 in our series. I know. We're grinding through the book. And thus far, we've got through pretty much the first 10 chapters. So we're finishing today on chapter 10. If you've got a Bible with you, you might want to open it, but don't worry, we've got scriptures coming up on the screen. You might want to ask yourself, well, what is this passage all about? Well, this evening, in Luke chapter 10, Jesus is wanting to speak into the issues of busyness, stress, and overwork. Not only that, he's wanting to address over-responsibility, anxiety, and living under the expectations of others. Now, using my heightened powers of spiritual discernment, I've got a hunch that this just might be applicable to some of us this evening. Some of us this evening do feel extremely overworked and extremely stressed. You might even be sat next to somebody tonight who's feeling under pressure and overworked. If so, nudge them in the ribs and say, stop answering emails on your mobile phone and listen to this, because this applies to you, all right? Are you ready? We're going to dive in. Just a few verses, but we're going to unpack them together. Okay, here we go. Starting at verse 38, Luke chapter 10. Background is, we're at Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' home. We know from John 11 that this is 2 miles outside of Jerusalem in a little village called Bethany, and it served as a rest stop for Jesus. So that's the setting for these verses here. Let's read them together. Verse 38. Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. Okay, so that's our little passage for this evening. In a moment, we're going to play the which are you most like, Mary or Martha game, and we're going to see what we can learn from these two women. Then I would imagine that around 90% of us, myself included, are going to be horribly convicted that we are actually quite a lot like Martha after all. Then there's going to be a session of repenting and weeping and gnashing of teeth. So that's all going to come later. It's going to be a lot of fun together. I hope you're looking forward to it. But just before that, I wanted to make a couple of quick observations for us this evening. A couple of observations straight off the bat. These ones are for free, if you like, okay? Observation number one is this. Firstly, this passage isn't about anti-serving. Jesus isn't saying, oh, it's wrong to serve one another or to serve the church. He's not suddenly coming down hard on anybody who works in a kitchen. It's not like he's got it in for chefs or anything like that. Just literally, the passage right before this was the parable of the Good Samaritan that Phil so ably looked for us at the other week. And that parable is all about practical service. And then we're going to see in a few chapters' time when we get to Luke chapter 22, the disciples come to Jesus and they ask Jesus quite possibly the dumbest question ever in all of history. They say to Jesus, they go up to Jesus and say to Jesus, which one of us disciples is the greatest of them all? I mean, how daft a question is that? Jesus then replies with these words. He talks about how kings lord it over people. And he says this to them in verse 26. But not so with you, not to sort of lord over others. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, in other words, the lowest, and the leader as the one who serves. So Jesus is saying, if you want to follow me, then it's about service. If you're following Jesus, then you're following someone who laid down his very life for others. Christianity is all about service. So it can't be saying it's bad to serve, because that doesn't make any sense at all. It must be about something else. Hold on to that thought, because we're going to come back to that in a moment. So that's observation number one. Observation number two is this. Second observation is that this story is about two sisters who were brought up in the same household, presumably by the same parents, in the same home environment, and yet were completely different to one another. Some of us here this evening have got brothers and sisters, same home environment, but I guess 9 times out of 10, they are completely and utterly different to you. That's the same here in this passage. Totally different personality types. I just love the honesty of the story here. It looks like from the text that they even managed to wind each other up a little bit. Here's a deep thought for you on a Sunday evening. The Bible describes us as a church family, and it is just possible that maybe from time to time we grate with one another just a little bit. Because in this room, I guess there'll be, 100 different personality types and viewpoints, perspectives on the world at large. 300 or so different ways of looking at things just in this room alone. Don't worry, though. You're the normal one. It's the others around you who are a bit odd in their way of thinking, okay? I guess I want us to realize that having a different viewpoint on things is just what goes with being part of a family. My boys, I've got 4 children, a couple of my boys share a room together, and they manage to wind each other up. They'll squabble over the Lego. They'll squabble over the Nerf guns. And then when I go into their room and I'll say, right, who started all of this? They'll squabble over who started the squabbling. That's just part of life. But just you try picking on one of them in the playground, you'll unleash 7 kinds of fury from their siblings. It's just the same here in the King's Arms. Like my boys, we're learning to live together. They're learning to work through their differences, and so are you and I. There's a work in progress going on in each one of our lives. And that's why we have this principle here at the King's Arms that if you've got a problem with someone, you go and speak to them about it. We say, challenge in person and encourage in writing. In other words, go and talk to the person face to face if there's a problem. But sometimes it's nice if you want to encourage somebody to write a note because they can reread it again and it can continue to encourage them. Some churches have this culture where if you've got a difficulty with somebody, what you do is you hide yourself away and you spend 3 or 4 hours composing this wonderfully eloquent letter that you then post to the person. They then spend another 3 or 4 hours composing a similar letter in retort and they post it back to them and it all ends up unrelational. It fractures a family rather than bonds it together. We're not going to do that here. If you've got a problem at all with somebody in this room, go talk to them at the end of the meeting. If you've got a problem with anything in this church, go talk to Steve. He'd be very happy to speak with you. Just form an orderly queue and he'll get to each of you in turn. But let's make sure we work through our differences because there's a process of maturing going along the way. And just the same as my boys in the playground, I'd love to think that in this church, when push comes to shove, we stand together. Because at the end of the day, the things we've got in common are so much greater than our differences. Okay? So we're family here. So 2 little observations for you. Okay, having said those, let's get into the meat of this passage together, shall we? Let's look at Martha and Mary. Let's take a look at their personality types, the kinds of people that they were. You've got to ask yourself, first of all, why is this story here in the Bible? Why do we particularly read so much about Martha? Well, I'd suggest to you, it's because Martha wasn't the last ever Martha, if you get my drift. That since then, there have been millions of Marthas throughout history, and it's just possible there might be 1 or 2 Martha types amongst us this evening. So as we go through this character list, you might want to think to yourself, how much does that reflect me? In what way am I like Martha? Let's start with the positives, because there's some good things about Martha, okay? The first thing I'd say is this. Martha's hospitable. We read right in that first verse there in 38, that Martha seems to own this house and she welcomes Jesus into the home. We know from elsewhere in the Gospels that this was a regular occurrence and this was something of a resting place for Jesus on his travels. It was conveniently located to Jerusalem and so it might even have been that they had a guest room for him or that they were regularly catering for him in some kind of way. So Martha's a generous kind of person. It might fit you too. Not only that, but she's honest. You know, I just love the fact that she's close enough to Jesus to speak to Jesus when there's a problem. Shame she didn't speak to Martha, but good that she had a close enough relationship with Jesus to go and speak to him. I wonder, are you able to speak to Jesus when you've got some kind of problem? Do you have that closeness of relationship like Martha did? But thirdly, and perhaps most significantly, Martha is a doer. In modern language, she's an activator. She's the kind of person that's never happier than when she's on task. She's on a mission. She's got something to physically do. Doers are the kinds of people who love a new project, who love to get their teeth into something, like to see some results from their activities and their actions. However, they can be sometimes slightly overambitious. See if this rings any bells with you. I know it does for me because, to be honest, DIY would tend to be my Achilles heel on this one. I'm sometimes overly ambitious about what I can actually achieve, practically speaking. A number of years back now, shortly after our daughter Anna was born, we bought a dilapidated Victorian house in Black Tom here in Bedford, and then proceeded over the following months to dilapidate it a little bit further. We knocked down a whole lot of walls and then a chimney with soot everywhere. And then we did the wiring and we had a go at the plumbing. And to be honest, by the time I was done with the house, you could have filmed an episode of Scrap Heap Challenge in the living room. That was really sort of the feel of the place. It's the back garden, well, Kate Adie could have given a report from there. You know, it looked like bomb craters and a war zone. Things got so bad that my extended family were very concerned, and they got in contact with the BBC. So one evening, I received a phone call from the BBC because they wanted to film an episode of DIY SOS in our house. This is absolutely true. Not like my other stories. This one is really true. And so I'm on the phone thinking, how do we deal with this? And in the end, my wife and I had a bit of a discussion about it. She was all for it. But to be honest with you, I didn't fancy the idea of millions of people watching me as the numpty who knocked down all these walls and then was unable to reinstate them again. And so in the end, we decided that we wouldn't go through with it, and it only took us a further 7 years to sort it out. So we got there in the end, and I think she's forgiven me. But you might be a bit like that. You know, a doer, you want to get your teeth into something, have a go at something, but maybe just a little bit overambitious. It generally works out well when a Martha type is married to somebody else who balances them out a little bit. You're in trouble, though, if one Martha marries another Martha. That's a little bit like having a car with two accelerators and no brake, yeah? It's a real fun journey, but you know you're going to crash sooner or later. So there are some good aspects to Marthas, but we've got to be aware of the downsides. So let's unpack a little bit more some of the problems associated with being a Martha or not. It tends to be this way with all kinds of personality types and giftings. I heard someone once say, and I think it's quite profound, that often our greatest weakness is our greatest strength overemphasized. Our greatest weakness is our greatest strength overemphasized. Let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. So for instance, if you have a gifting of empathy, so you're able to demonstrate compassion and concern for others, maybe you're a really good listener, you're really good at understanding others, it might well be that your greatest weakness is oversensitivity. You're easily hurt by others around you. Because you've got this gifting of sensitivity, but if it's exaggerated, the flip side of that is oversensitivity. You're very thin-skinned and people easily hurt you. Or take another one. For some of us, we've got a really strong gift of discernment. We understand where people are coming from. We can suss out their motives and what they're thinking and how they work, how they tick very well. But the flip side of our discernment gift is sometimes judgment, where we dip from this place of understanding them to judging them. That might be something that you'd struggle with too. Or maybe it's more like Martha. You see, Martha's got this natural gifting of responsibility. She sees the gaps. She gets on with stuff. But of course, the flip side of responsibility is over-responsibility. I wonder if you can identify with that at all. So we have this Martha kind of situation of over-responsibility going on. Jesus has turned up at her house, and most likely he's come with a whole bunch of followers. He tended to travel that way. And he's turned up unannounced. I'm guessing he didn't phone ahead. I'm guessing he just turned up on the doorstep. And what does Martha do? Martha goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. This woman goes into overdrive, and she suddenly thinks, right, the disciples are here, Jesus is here, I've got to pull off this catering miracle in the kitchen. And she's running around the kitchen, I would imagine, and she's thinking, right, we've gone from having 3 people for dinner to 43 people for dinner. What on earth are we going to do? What do you provide for 43 people? What do you cook for 43 Christians? I know. Quiche. We're going to cook quiche. Christians love quiche. So she's dashing around the kitchen, and I imagine in one hand she's got the fry pan, in the other she's chopping vegetables. Maybe with her foot she's sort of stirring the sauce. She's just flying around this place. But as time goes on, she's dashing around the kitchen. She suddenly stops and she thinks, hang on a minute. Where's Mary gone? I thought she was going to be in here giving me a hand. Maybe she sort of cranes her head around the doorway and she sees through to the living room and sees that Mary is sat in the living room at Jesus' feet, listening intently to all that he's got to say. And she thinks to herself, what's going on here? I'm in here flogging myself to death and there's Mary just casually reclining with Jesus. What's she doing in there anyway? She's not meant to be sat at the feet of the rabbi. And suddenly, busyness boils over into resentment and anger. And it just all gets too much for her. And you see, she goes up to Jesus and she says, Jesus, look, do you not care that I'm in here doing all this and Mary's in there just relaxing? Just a tip for you. Anytime you find yourself saying to Jesus, do you not care? Anytime you find yourself telling Jesus off, you know, the king of the universe, you might want to rethink your situation because the chances are you've gone off track ever so slightly. But I guess if we're honest, most of us can identify with that. Most of us feel that way at some point or other. Maybe you feel that way right now. Maybe you feel that in church. We've grown as a church by about 30% in the past 10 months. That means all of our teams, our setup teams, our welcome teams, all of them are just creaking at the seams. Our Friday night outreach meeting to the disadvantaged is run by a very small but highly dedicated group of people. Last week we had 130 children in our King's Kids meetings. 130. The King's Arms breeding program has been extremely successful. But all of that creates work. And you might be in one of those overstretched teams. Or maybe it's not in church. Perhaps it's in the workplace. Maybe your boss is just piling on job after job after job. Or you've got your own business and you're trying to make this thing work. Trying to get the books to balance and you've got staff who go off sick and you just feel lumbered with this thing. Or maybe it's in the home and you're caring for small children and your partner's just out a lot with their job commitments and you feel, I'm dumped in it here. I'm over my head with all that's going on. And you go from this point of being in responsibility to dipping into over-responsibility. Maybe some of us here tonight can identify with Martha in that regard. So that's the first area where Martha goes off track. She's over-responsible. The second area is this. Martha, I believe, is independent and just a little bit self-reliant. You know, there's nothing in the text here to suggest that Jesus asked her to go and do the whole MasterChef thing in the kitchen, okay? He's not asking her to go off and cook for everybody. If there's a bit of the Martha in you, then you'll be great at spotting what needs to be done. You'll be great at seeing the gaps, but that's different to Jesus asking you to fill those gaps. So Martha takes on herself something that Jesus never asked her to do. Are you doing stuff that Jesus never asked you to do? Have you just taken too much on for yourself? You see, Martha believes that because Jesus is in her house, she has to do everything. She tries to do it all within herself. Except that feeding lots of people from a small amount of ingredients would actually be something that Jesus is rather good at. Yeah? Just a few chapters earlier, we read, you know, give Jesus a few fish and a half a loaf of bread, and he's pretty good at mass catering. He does okay, yeah? She's focused on her own resources. Martha-type personalities will tend to look at what is humanly practical rather than what is heavenly available. Is that a risk for you? You look at what I can practically do rather than what God might provide in your situation. So she's over-responsible. She's independent and a bit self-reliant. And then thirdly, I think we can safely say Martha has some control issues. She has this mental picture of how things should be. She and Mary, together in the kitchen, will pull off this culinary miracle, and Jesus will be amazed at what they provided. The disciples will praise her, and then she'll bring out the cookbook following that, you know, baking for Jesus or whatever it might be. She's got it in her head. This is the way life is going to work out. Only she can't handle it when things don't work out as she had planned. What are you like when life doesn't work out the way that you had it planned? She had everything in her head the way it was meant to be. Martha's the type of person who needs everything to be just so in order to feel at peace in her heart. Martha's are the kinds of people who tend to have a filing system for their CDs or their soups arranged alphabetically in the cupboards. They can tell you what they'll be doing on Tuesday, October the 12th, 2014. They're those kind of people. They know it all. They're planners. They've got it all mapped out. It might be a bit long in the tooth now, but I wonder if any of you here tonight are Friends fans. Anybody like episodes of Friends? Yeah. If Martha was to be a character on Friends, which friend would she be? Monica. Got it down in one. Monica and Martha even start with the same letter. It's meant to be. That's where they got the inspiration for Friends from. She is Monica incarnate. Most of us have at least one area where we're a bit Martha-like, a bit uptight about things. It might not be the kitchen, although for many of us that is the case. You can tell control issues in the kitchen. Imagine for a moment somebody coming along and cooking a dinner in your kitchen whilst you had to watch them. How would you find it? Some of us, particularly the guys, particularly whatever, some of the women right now are just feeling horribly violated at the mere thought of somebody else being in your kitchen. But it might not be the kitchen for you. It might be other areas where you have to be in control. I realised this week that for me it's driving. I'm just not the best passenger. Whenever Emma's behind the wheel, I instinctively feel the need to advise her on her driving style. I'm sure she appreciates it deeply. For me, it's that. But what is it for you? It might be a different kind of area. It might be something to do with work, or it might be anybody that touches your laptop, or how somebody else handles their time, or maybe you're one of those people that has to have the correct grammar, you know? You're like part of the spelling mafia or something like that. You know, it just gets your goat when somebody misspells something, puts two L's where there should be one or whatever. All of us have some area where we're like that. Martha thinks she knows best. But here's the problem. It seems harmless enough on the surface, but bottom line, Martha wants Jesus to help her with her plans rather than for Martha to help Jesus with his. And that's the risk with all of this, that we say, God, I'll serve you so long as the agenda is set by me. God, I'll follow you everywhere, wherever you want, as long as we're going along this route and we stop off there and we always park there because that's what we always do. I'll do whatever you want, Jesus, prolong, so long as it's this, this, and this. Martha wants to box in Jesus and for Jesus to fulfill her expectations. Guess what? God doesn't like being boxed. And put all of that together, and there's some impact we see in Martha's emotional well-being. We see that she's stressed and distracted. Jesus says to her, I believe he says it really tenderly, he says, Martha, Martha, you're anxious and troubled about many things. That could be a tagline for our generation, couldn't it? You're anxious and troubled about many things. You see, the more you believe that everything depends on you, that you have to get everything right, then the more anxious you will be. The more you believe that everything depends on Jesus, guess what? The more peaceful you'll be. The more you realize that Jesus is the center of the universe, the less you have to be the center. You see, self-reliance, trying to do everything yourself, ends up ultimately in anxiety. And sometimes people end up in a real mess. It can lead to depression or even mental illness, where they're trying to do everything in themselves. Martha ends up fretting about vol-au-vents and puff pastry or whatever. Martha's desperately trying to hold it all together. Are you trying to hold it all together tonight? Spin the plates? Whereas Mary is sat with the one who holds it all together. And that's the difference between the two. You can either try and do it all yourself or you can sit with the one who holds it all together. Let me ask you, how are your anxiety levels tonight? What are you doing to try and cope with the stress that you feel? Where are you going to try and find relief for the anxiety that you live with? Are you believing that the buck stops with you for everything? One of the things I constantly say to myself to try and help me with this is I say to myself, don't worry, God's ability to fix things is much greater than my ability to screw them up. Which is reassuring because I've got a big capacity to screw stuff up. But fortunately, God is even bigger than that. So she's living with this anxiety and this stress. That in turn then leads on to other things. I believe she's judgmental of others. Marthas invariably end up judging other people. Because if you're constantly monitoring your own performance, you've got these massive expectations that you never meet, then it's not long before you start shifting the blame to others around you. It doesn't take long before you're looking at what other people are doing. And the fruit of that, in turn, leads to self-pity and resentment. This is what one theologian, a guy called Mark Driscoll, a great teacher, says on the subject. He says this: here's what happens to those who have a Martha heart. They become resentful. Now, outwardly, it looks like they're worshipping. Inwardly, though, they're seething. No one ever helps. No one does their part. No one follows through. I can't depend on anyone. No one helps me. Does that ring any bells for you? You said that kind of thing to yourself before? I'd like you to think just for a moment about your workplace or where you serve in church. Just for a moment. You see, if you're a Martha, then you'll have a mental list of those people who work alongside you in whatever setting. And within that list, you'll have an idea of those who pull their weight and those who don't. And you'll end up judging those people who, in your mind, don't actually do what they're meant to be doing. Can you identify with that at all? At the risk of being controversial just for a moment, I think there's something of a Martha spirit in us as a church. The King's Arms is a wonderful, vibrant place to be, don't get me wrong. But it's also an extremely busy place to be. And the danger is, therefore, that I get a sense of value out of being busy. This idea that I'm busy, therefore I must be important. And we need to really rethink that. We need to watch out that we don't confuse a full diary with a full heart. They're not the same thing. Having a full diary can actually mean that you end up with an empty heart, that you feel hollow on the inside, just frantic with all the different things that are going on. So I wonder if that applies to us at all, and maybe we need to rethink some of our commitments and priorities. That's a snapshot for you of Martha this evening. I wonder, do you see yourself in there at all? Do you recognize the person next to you as a Martha at all? Are you married to a Martha? Are you becoming increasingly Martha-like? If so, let's look at the solution for a little bit. Let's take a look at Mary, because I believe she's the flip side of this. The first thing is this. The first thing I note is this. Mary wasn't doing nothing. I put that in there this evening just for the Martha grammar police, just to annoy you, okay? Mary wasn't doing nothing. She wasn't just being passive. She wasn't just sitting back and just letting things go with the flow. Instead, she was making active, positive choices. She's prioritizing relationship. In those days, men and women would never have mixed socially. They would have operated in separate parts of the houses. Never the twain shall meet. And not only that, but there was no way a woman would ever be taught by a rabbi as Jesus was seen. So what Mary's doing is she's crossing these social boundaries in a really courageous way to go and be with Jesus. Verse 42 says that Mary has chosen. In other words, she's made this deliberate, conscious effort to go and be with Jesus. The truth is, you see, it would have been much easier for Mary to have stayed in the kitchen. That's where everybody expected her to be. Yet she chooses to go to Jesus. And in doing so, she breaks a massive social taboo. I wonder if you've ever seen anybody do something like that. They've done something that's completely out of the box, and you're just thinking, oh, this is a bit awkward. I remember hearing about a guy who was preaching at quite a large church in the States, and he was partway through his preacher, a little bit like this, when suddenly his phone rang, which, you know, perhaps is embarrassing enough. But as soon as his phone rang, he said to the congregation, oh, you'll have to excuse me a moment. I just got to take this. This is in front of hundreds of people, okay? He says to them, just talk amongst yourselves. And then he chats on the phone for a while, and then hangs up his call, and then goes back to the congregation. And he says to the congregation, oh, sorry about that. He says to them, that was just my son. And when I first heard that, I thought, flipping heck, that's totally out of the box. What? That's out of order. That's terrible that he should do that. But then the story went on. And the guy says to the congregation, sorry, that was my son. We have this agreement, me and my son. I want to model something of what the Heavenly Father's like to him, as me as an earthly dad. And we've got this agreement that my son can have access to me at any time that he needs it. So that's why I took the call from him. I tell you, I went from going thinking, that's terrible, through to, actually, maybe that's wonderful. I don't know. Or a bit of both. We recognize when people cross these social taboos. And Mary does this right off the bat here. Well, think of that story I've just told you about the guy on the phone, and then times it by 100, and you've got a little tiny glimpse of what it would have been like for what Mary did. She did a beautiful thing that time. She sacrificed what everybody would have thought of her and all the expectations of her sister and all the guys in the room and went to be with Jesus. It was an incredible social presumption. And yet Jesus encourages the opportunity and Mary goes for it, for all she's worth. Mary is courageously crossing the boundaries that would be an obstacle between her and Jesus. What are the boundaries for you? What are the obstacles? Maybe it is the expectation of others. Maybe you've never actually made a commitment to follow Jesus because bottom line, you're worried what everybody else will think. Or maybe the obstacles are more practical. Your diary and your time is just so full of stuff that Jesus gets squeezed out. And so you suffer in your relationship with him in order to do all this other activity. Think about it for a moment. I mean, after all, who offered Jesus the best hospitality at the end of the day anyway? I think it was Mary, not Martha. Mary was offering exactly the kind of hospitality that Jesus was after. In other words, an open heart. She was receptive to his message. Jesus didn't need Martha's help preparing the food. She was off doing something he never asked her to do. Like we said, he can do mass catering. Jesus instead wants a relationship with us. Psychologists say that we tend to get satisfaction from two places, either through achievement, doing stuff, or through connection, relating to other people. The risk is if we're a bit Martha-like, we get all of our satisfaction just from doing stuff. That's, you know, a bit of satisfaction from there, not a problem. All of your satisfaction, it starts to become very unhealthy. And the thing about it is that if all of your satisfaction is from doing stuff, then it's totally temporary. How many of you know that the do list never ends? How many of you realize that? I said this morning, I can see that with my Excel spreadsheet. You know, you scroll down the cells and it just keeps going on forever. I had somebody come up to the end who admitted to Martha-type tendencies, said, actually, there are 251,000 different cells. There is an end to it in the end. I thought, man, you scroll through to the end of the Excel spreadsheet just to see what was on it. But it feels like there's no, I know some of you are shocked at that, but it feels like there's no end to the task, doesn't it? The thing is, Martha's end up living for what's temporary, because you're only as good as the last meal that you cooked, or the last customer you served, or the last class you taught. If you're just going on performance, then you've only got what you did just now. Whereas Mary's going for a relationship. And the promise that Jesus gives her is that she will not lose what's been given to her, that she will get her reward. The thing about relationship, is, particularly relationship with Jesus, is it's eternal. It's never going to get snatched away from you. You get it forever. That's what makes it so precious, so valuable. Jesus describes this as a reward to her. He says she's chosen the better portion and it won't be taken away from her. What does that mean? Better portion is like a portion of pie? What's that about? No, it's much deeper. It's got a lot more meaning than that. You see, portion means what's allotted to you, what's given to you, what's your right, your inheritance, put another way. In the Old Testament, the portion was particularly connected to the land, to Cana. And it was connected to going in and taking the land and then occupying the land. So we read in Joshua 14, rather, that Caleb gets his portion of the promised land near Hebron. And it was about having a place of his own. You switch across to the New Testament, and it's a different story. The shift goes from a place to a person. And the prize, the reward, the inheritance is knowing him. It's about having relationship with him. So Ephesians 1:11 says, in him, Jesus, we have obtained an inheritance. In other words, Jesus is the prize. Jesus is the one who cleans us up. Jesus is the one who brings us into relationship. Jesus is the one who puts us into the church, who guides us through the Holy Spirit. Jesus is the one who heals us and gives us a purpose for living. Jesus is the one who promises us that we will be rich in relationship with him in eternity. He's everything. We've gone through this crazy season recently as a family where everything just seemed to go wrong at one time. I don't know if you've ever ever had a time like that. We were renting a house, and the landlords told us they wanted to sell the house and gave us notice to leave. And then in the same week, our car broke down in IKEA, of all places. Bad stuff often happens to me in IKEA. It's a four-letter word for a reason, I'm sure. But so we break down in IKEA, and I thought, okay, well, it's a new fuel pump, the guy says. I thought, well, that'll be fine, £200 or £300, we'll find a way of doing that. We take it to the garage. Ours is a special kind of car that requires a special part. Guess how much a new fuel pump was for my car? £2,400. It's like the Brazilian national debt right there, just paying for that. So we're in this situation where everything's going wrong at the same time. And I'm praying about it to God. I say, oh, everything's gone wrong. We're losing everything, the house, car. And then I just felt just a check in my spirit. And I realized, hang on a minute. We're losing some bricks and mortar and a lump of steel that wasn't very good in the first place. I'm not really losing anything. All my relationships, the things that are of true value in this world, are intact. If anything, they're deepening through needing to lean on one another. If anything, my relationship with Jesus is going deep because I'm needing to trust him in the midst of all of this. And what I discover along the way, well, God wants to teach me a whole lot of stuff, and then he ends up giving us the house we're renting. We're able to buy it now, cheaper than we would have done last year. And a whole bunch of students and staff here at the King's Arms, without my knowledge, have a secret offering and present me with a check that covers all the costs of our car repair. God sorts it all out, by the way. I know, yeah, bless them. But the point is, I felt God was teaching me about what was most valuable. And what was most valuable in my relationships? What's most valuable to you? If the most valuable thing in your life is your relationships, I want to ask you, what are you doing to protect them? What are you doing to guard them? What are you doing to value those things and honor those things? How much space are you giving to those things? Because at the end of the day, knowing others and ultimately knowing Jesus is the only thing that makes sense of this life that we lead. Doing church, doing business will never be enough. No business, no church will ever satisfy. Only knowing him will give us ultimate satisfaction. The best thing in this life, I believe, is relationship with him. So what are we saying? I guess I'm saying at the end of the day, you can either choose to be in the kitchen or you can choose to be sat at Jesus' feet. And Jesus makes this promise, if you choose him, you won't ever lose that relationship. You won't ever lose that reward. If you choose Jesus, well, then it's like his grip on you is much tighter than your grip on him. Martha's going for temporary affirmation from people by living up to their expectations of her. Mary's going for a deep, abiding intimacy. She's drinking deeply from Jesus' words. Yes, we'll still serve. It's like we want to have Mary's heart and Martha's hands. That we, in having Mary's heart, everything that we do flows out of our love for him, because that's the wellspring, that's the source of all of our service, not some just dutiful obligation to do our best for him, but rather expressing our love for him in the way that we serve one another.